We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome in to the RotoWire NFL podcast. John McKechnie, Mario Puig, hanging out with you. John McKechnie, as in local Madison Simpsons trivia champion.
Yeah, I haven't, we haven't had a chance to, actually, it's now the John McKechnie Simpsons trivia podcast, and there's some football toward the end. And
we're pivoting, yeah.
But yeah, you guys are going to listen to the first half, or, you know, I guess it's more likely like the first 30th, and you're gonna like it.
We'll splice John in football in the groin.
John won. He's the Simpsons king of the Midwest, probably, after winning trivia at some
if you win in Madison here. I think that that pretty much qualifies for the entire Midwest.
I don't know, I guess this might not be, this might be like the initial rounds, like maybe you advance to the, you know, the more serious Jeopardy audition after this. Like I feel like the real, like the real killer Simpson trivia folks were kind of just like watching from afar, but now you're
from
on
their bunkers.
Now you're on their radar, and they're preparing goons, surveillance methods, things like that.
Yeah, the comic book guy types out there are certainly, you know, they're on notice now.
Yeah, but you won a gift card to the bar that you couldn't use the day that you won it, which I thought was weird.
I was okay with that, I suppose.
But I just thought it was, I thought it was kind of funny how they were like, as if they were like,
no backseas.
Well, I was thinking it was almost as if they were like, look, you need a cool off period. You can't just have access to all this $25 worth of liquor when you're going crazy off this high of winning the trivia.
I needed to drive anyway, so I mean it was okay. But they do have the best selection of Three Floyds in town, which is probably my favorite brewery. So
oh nice, yeah, I don't know that
I'm pretty
one.
Happy about it,
but yeah, that was an impressive victory. I wanted to go, but I had to do NFL free agency watch. Crap.
Well, why don't we just?
But it wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. Then. Yeah. Oh, that's right. We were going to do that.
Okay. And actually, just as I sat down at that trivia, the news broke. And we'll start with this and just kind of filter on down through the big signings and the little signings that have kind of made the beginning of this new league year as crazy or crazier than we've seen in recent years. And that is the Odell Beckham trade. So, I mean, leading off, what did you make of? What do you make of Cleveland now as a contender? What do you make of the fantasy fallout? And then what do you make of the Giants haul in return?
Well, the Giants got Jabril Peppers, who is pretty much analogous to kind of like a late first round pick, I think. I know he turned a corner last year, and if he maintains his progress, he'll be one of the best safeties for a while. But Odell Beckham is not the kind of player you can just find. And it's, I think, pretty short-sighted and insane of the Giants. And I think it's pretty clearly a case where it's like you got a couple insulated people like Dave Gettleman and the ownership who basically don't know anything about anything, but have been insulated in their like protected class so long that they don't talk to anybody but sycophants who tell them how smart they are and how great they are. Because turns out if you talk to them that way, they promote you and give you treats. Whereas you tell them that I don't think you should do this extension for Eli Manning and I don't think you should trade Odell Beckham, they'll go, I don't know if you're right for us. And so they end up with people around them who aren't quite as stupid as the decision makers actually are, but they're absolutely willing to pretend to be stupid and validate all of their worst intuitions. And it's ridiculous. I mean, the Giants are going to be terrible. They're going to waste Saquon Barkley's career. And you know, Pat Shurmur, total chump. He thinks he's going to, like, I'm sure he's getting these assurances from Gettleman and the ownership that, like, yeah, you're our guy, don't worry about it. But, hey, Pat, when you guys lose 12 games this year, do you think that it's going to be Gettleman who volunteers to get fired? Or do you think he might try to keep his job? I don't know how that's going to go, but I bet Pat is the first one to get fired. Maybe you could ask Nathaniel Hackett about that. Maybe you could ask John DeFilippo about that. Coaches will fire the guys underneath. Yeah, ask the Carolina secondary coach and linebackers coach or whoever it was that Ron Rivera fired, even though he's the defensive guy. He's the guy in charge. Like, they will always use you as a scapegoat, you imbecile.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's going to be a great job, and I'm wrong. Who knows?
I think most of the football community probably agrees with you. I don't think anyone is really caping for the Giants at this point. They're sort of beyond defending it with the moves that they've made.
It's good for Odell, though, and I guess we should be happy for him because, I mean, he gets to go play with, I think we have to call the Browns pretty easily like a top three roster in the league, and I don't know, particularly with Tom Brady approaching 42 or whatever now, I don't know what else the future can look like other than it's pretty much the Rams versus the Browns for a while. You know, the Chiefs too.
Chiefs, yeah.
Yeah, those three teams are just their own deal right now as far as I can see.
Yeah, the Browns become pretty easily the favorite in the AFC North, in my opinion, especially with like the attrition that the Steelers undergone. Obviously, the Steelers didn't even make the playoffs last year. Still not sold that the Ravens, I mean, I think the Ravens have made some good moves, and we'll get into those a little bit later.
They're in a transition phase, more like the one Cleveland was in before last year.
For sure. So, I mean, now, I mean, I feel like Baker Mayfield, with the guys that he has around him, namely with the addition of Odell, he becomes a pretty decent like MVP candidate. We'll have to see what the odds on that look like, but I would put some money down on that, honestly.
Yeah, I went with I did a rough projection yesterday, and it's not scientific or anything, but I thought it was pretty modest. Like, I don't feel like I was aggressive with it, and I feel like I can feel comfortable with a floor for Mayfield, a projected floor of about 4,600 yards and 35 touchdowns, with room for something more like 5,050 touchdowns.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, you could do Pat Mahomes stuff when you have Odell Beckham. They don't have Breshad Perriman. We'll talk about him probably a little bit later. But, sure. I mean, when you have Njoku stepping into his prime over the next couple of years, Chubb is going to be a 20-touchdown runner, I think, in this offense when healthy. Over 16 games, it's like he's running for 20 touchdowns. There's no way Mayfield, with all these weapons, Chubb being as good as he is, there's no chance that they stay away from the end zone very long in any particular game. So
sure.
I think, Mayfield's going to put up big numbers. It's bad news for Callaway for the short term because I think Odell basically plugs into his role from last year. Because Rashard Higgins can play slot pretty well, and I think he might be the heir to the Jarvis Landry role. But Landry has one more year of guaranteed money, so they're gonna keep him around this year, I would guess. But he takes a hit because he was going, I want to say, in like the early fourth or something like that, maybe mid fourth in some best ball, early best ball drafts I was doing. But I would think with Odell Beckham there, who, by the way, I'm projecting for probably like 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns as like floor type range.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Landry can have room for more than like 70 catches for maybe 900 yards. And he could catch like 8 to 10 touchdowns himself because Mayfield going over 40 is, I think, more likely than Mayfield staying under 30, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, yeah, it's going to be explosive. Maybe not everyone's going to be consistent in it, but I'm thinking explosives kind of like the 99 Rams, something like that.
Dang. All right, so pretty high expectations for this offense.
It's not going to be stopped.
And then, you know, the thing is, their defense, especially that
really
that front, is so nasty that, you know, as an offense that's going against the Browns and going against the defense, the pressure's on you. If you don't score, then you're going to fall behind really quickly, kind of like it was last year playing against the Chiefs, where it's like if you're not keeping up, you're falling behind, and you're falling behind quickly, probably to an amount that you cannot make up.
Yeah, you don't want to throw the ball against Cleveland. You want to keep the game script
just eaten alive.
Right, you want to keep the game script somehow, and you basically can't, but you want to keep the game script somehow such that you can run comfortably and only selectively take your shots downfield. But more likely you're going to need to take out your deeper drops earlier in the game than you'd like to. And Myles Garrett is, of course, the biggest problem. But Olivier
still getting better too.
Yeah, he's going to be a 20-sack player, maybe not next year, but maybe. And it's like Ogunjobi's already there. He's good. They've got some depth to sort through, but they have so much resources with the draft and the cap to get to it. I feel like they're going to be loaded with depth too.
They'll get more out of Vernon than the Giants ever did too.
Yeah, there's that, and I'm forgetting actually some. Who did they just signed a defensive tackle, didn't they? I feel like they got another tackle. Because I was just thinking, it's like Ogunjobi, and wait, I was just thinking about how. Oh, I wouldn't want that guy playing next to Ogunjobi if I was going against them. but yeah, I can't remember already what it was. In any case, the Browns, I think, are my like AFC favorite because the
Sheldon
Chiefs.
Richardson.
Oh God, yeah, Sheldon Richardson. That's a huge. Yeah, no wonder. That's a huge addition. He's got all pro talent for sure. And
then Jernard Avery, like as a rotational piece, is like nasty too.
Yeah, that guy looks like he could be another James Harrison or something like that. I guess they think of him more of a pass rushing specialist right now, but he's just super explosive and violent. And he's one of those weird athletes who's like 5'11", 250, and then super explosive.
Does he got like the Doomerville arms to him though?
I don't think he does, but he's. I know he had a really good workout numbers coming out of Memphis, where he also had like 25 tackles for loss a year. So he's just one of those guys now where you're like, why did he fall this far? Why does one team have the luxury of playing him, you know, 400 snaps a year instead of 800? So
yeah,
they have a lot of depth. The Peppers loss is a loss, but it's not going to matter. Like, it just won't matter when you have that pass rush.
Nope. So yeah, newsflash, the Browns are going to be really effing good for a really long time. So let's shift gears, try to tackle some of the other biggest signings. So chief among them would be Le'Veon Bell. His contract ends up being it sort of ended up being this thing where I've just gotten really exhausted on Twitter of the people that are like, huh, he sat out and he didn't get as much money as he thought he was going to. It's just like, who are you? And like, why are you doing this? And why are you laughing? Why are you cheering the ownership
these,
in this case? I don't understand
these surf-brained oafs who are just like, I just want someone to be my boss and tell me what to do. And I can't wait to just do what they tell them and grumble under my breath about how no fair, but I have pride. So that's, you know, it's,
I feel like it's not even only disgruntled Steelers fans that are like mad that he sat out last year. It's like just kind of the general consensus. It's like, oh, he didn't get as much money as he said he was going to.
Yeah. There's a lot of psychology going on here, but it's like, there's displaced, misdirected class envy where like these people who, they're workers in the real world and maybe they're even above middle class, but they resent their station in life. They're sick of knowing the full well that like all the people in charge of every aspect of their lives are people who were basically born into that station. And they know how, no matter how hard they work, there's some terrible scion of some rich family who gets further in life for doing no work at all. And they internalize this, but they don't sort it through. They don't realize the way that they actually think deep down. And then they look at someone like Le'Veon Bell, and sometimes they're actually direct and like forthright enough to just say it as like, I would do that job for less money than that. And it's like, great insight. Who cares? What do you point?
When's the last
do you think
time your heart rate is above has been like above 100 beats per minute?
But there's this thing where they look at Bell and they totally miss the point, which is like it's not like he just went into this as a business strategy. He just had what some people call the FU money. At which point, if you have FU money, you say a certain thing. Yeah, that's what it's for. And so he has enough money that he could go, ha, I just won't play then. And the Steelers went, we bet you will. And one of those two was wrong. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's ridiculous to be like, oh, Le'Veon, but it makes sense to be mad that he wasn't on your fantasy team last year if you picked him in the first round. That sucks. But be mad at the people who tried to shortchange him. Be mad at the NFL Players Union for having these ridiculous non-guaranteed contracts in every CBA.
The Steelers wanted to just grind him out last year and then kick him to the curb.
I think
ideally, they would have given him another 400 touches and then been like, all right, see you later.
The NFLPA, the league players in general, owe Le'Veon Bell a debt of gratitude for giving some muscle to expressing the muscle of labor to these owners in a way that almost no players are brave enough to do. And, you know, whatever, get mad that he didn't broadcast specifically his intentions or whatever. But you're caping for the owners when you do this. You're caping for the people who always go to the press with these leaks to say, like, by the way, Le'Veon Bell was he was being a real jerk a bunch of times and he's fat. And like, how do you think those quotes come out? Like, that's the ownership, that's the GM, those people, they put that stuff out. Le'Veon Bell doesn't have the means of doing, it's asymmetric warfare, basically. Bell had his leverage, he had his money to sit on, and he had a thought that he wanted to express, and he expressed it. That you don't have that thought, that you're not brave enough to have that thought, is not Le'Veon Bell's fault.
Nope.
Like, but anyway, going to the Jets will suck. Because not good that you're in an Adam Gase, Dowell Loggins offense. Gase, of course, is anti-tempo, just a weird guy in general, probably not going to do a very good job there. But if Le'Veon Bell's ADP is around that first, second round turn, he's still interesting to me because even if he's not particularly good, he'll get so much usage, and specifically as a pass catcher, his usage is unique, that he has a really high floor and he could reach a ceiling that only guys who are similarly busy as pass catchers, guys like, you know, David Johnson, Alvin Kamara, Saquon Barkley.
So who would you go with between a Le'Veon and a David Johnson you're picking towards the end of the first round?
I'm way higher on David Johnson than most people so far. He's like my 6 or 7 overall player. So I have David Johnson safely ahead of Bell, who's more like my probably like 10, 11, 12, something like that. And it's just a weird class this year. Like, we're not used to this much depth at running back, but we're even less used to the depth that there is at receiver. So I'm hammering running back early, and I'm taking, you know, T.Y. Hilton in the late third. That's kind of how I'm approaching things. So I'm going to probably end up with a decent number of Bell shares, even though I'm not really, like, rushing to get him.
Okay, makes sense. I do think that he's going to be really busy as well. I'm probably on the Bell over Johnson side right now, but
that's,
you know,
fair.
I got some thinking to do. I think the Cardinals are, I mean, it's not like the Jets are the poster child of a functional offense or a team with a great offensive line, but, boy, the Cardinals just have so much work to do before I'm convinced. But
I'm just banking on like 100 cut. He could run for like 500 yards this year for all I know, but he's going to get 1,200 carries through the air then.
There we go. Beautiful. But you mentioned T.Y. Hilton. Indianapolis just added a complimentary piece for him, you know, maybe take some heat off of him in coverage. And I think there is a very visceral reaction to this signing. I'm talking about Devin Funchess, of course, where it's a one-year deal worth $10 million with the potential of going up to $13 million if he hits the incentives within that contract, I believe. And a lot of people were like, this is crazy. I was one of those people. Convince me otherwise.
Well, Funchess is a guy he has his limitations. He's not the most natural wide receiver. Like, he's always been more toolsy than skilled, but he's also been always young for his level of competition.
Sure.
And it makes sense to be underdeveloped when that's the case. And it kind of is a parallel, I think, to Dante Moncrief, who he too is a guy who's more toolsy than skilled specifically as a receiver. And he has his rough edges or whatever, but these guys, when they hit this part of their career, when they, you know, 26, 27, something like that, when they're going into their fifth, sixth year in the NFL, guys like that usually, even if by just, you know, chance, being in the right place at the right time, something like that, they usually have at least a couple good years. Like, they eventually, usually become the player everyone expected them to be just later than they wanted them to, and for like a more brief amount of time than they expected. So Devin Funchess, it feels like he's been around forever, right?
It does.
He turns 25 in late May. So this is a guy who showed up to the NFL. Like, he must have been like 20 and a half when he got to the NFL. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's got four uneven years, but he's also 1 year removed from turning 111 targets into 840 yards, eight touchdowns at age 23. He was credited with at least seven drops last year, and he had four or five in one game. So that's just the yips, something like that. Like, he got rattled. He needed a change of scenery. He got it. And now he's going to the team that turned Eric Ebron into a 13-touchdown player. Yes. Last year.
This is the part of your article and yeah, your general prognosis on the situation that I will concede, because I'm not... Like, I've pretty much soured on Devin Funchess, the player, especially right. Compared to my
initial expectations. It's the opportunity we can sell ourselves on.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and you bring up the supporting cast other than T.Y. Hilton out wide that they have. I mean, we're talking Chester Rogers, Ryan Grant, Zach Pascal. I mean, they were just running through guys, you know, basically off the street last year.
Yeah, like CFL compliment. Backup types.
Horrible, yeah. Horrible guys. So, I mean, Funchess, I will certainly admit, is a lot better than those guys. And like you said, if they can turn an Ebron guy, a guy who didn't quite hit the level that people were expecting.
The Lions cut him. Yeah. Like, they didn't, or wait, maybe they didn't use the last year option, but it's the same difference. Like, Funchess is just walking from Carolina.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, this is a point where like you were saying, the change of scenery with the, you know, kind of upper echelon tools, talent, it's going to get, I mean, he's quarterback wise. Is Andrew Luck like a huge improvement over Cam Newton? You know, who's to say, but
no, but it's indoors. So that's good. Nice. And he's not going to see double teams. Like, Ebron would sooner see probably more attention from defenses, although that I would expect that to change by midseason or so. But yeah, Funchess is a guy who just, when you're as big as he is and athletic as he is, and if you are good enough at age 23 to put up 840 yards and eight touchdowns, it's just at some point, and at least up to a certain price, there's just not much reason to overthink it. It's like, you can just easily sell yourself the idea that even if he's not that good, he could be a big fantasy profit. And particularly if Luck throws 39 touchdowns again, it's like Funchess is a lock to crush his current ADP.
Okay, so let's tidy this up then. We were just talking about the Jets. We were just talking about Indianapolis. Toss up between Funchess and the newly acquired Jameson Crowder in a PPR type format. Jameson Crowder on the Jets.
Funchess by miles for me, and it's admittedly closer in PPR because Crowder is a low depth of target guy and Funchess is a downfield sideline kind of target, post route kind of target. But Crowder is...
I like the Crowder signing for the
Jets.
Yeah,
I think he's way better than Humphreys and probably Cole Beasley too, but he's just had these injury problems the last 2 years. He's got to compete with Le'Veon Bell for a lot of targets. They already have... Quincy Enunwa is one slot guy. I don't know. They might be moving him outside more so, but I think both Enunwa and Crowder will play a lot of slot, just as both Albert Wilson and Danny Amendola did last year. Like, the Dolphins ran a lot of trip formation, which is two slot guys.
Point you're bringing up.
Yeah, so it's like that's something like McVay does a lot of that too. So that's how you end up, you look at the splits of the outside and the slot for the Rams receivers, and it's like, how the hell are they playing more? Everybody's playing more slot snaps than outside snaps, and that's basically how you do it. So he'll be on the field, but they're not going to run more than probably like 57, 58 plays a game, and it's like Le'Veon Bell could get 25 touches from scrimmage in any given game. So I don't think there'll be that much to go around with Crowder. Okay. As much as I think he's good. And the part of my tempered enthusiasm with him is also that I think Enunwa and Anderson, I think everybody agrees, is good by now. But I think Enunwa is also good. He just had weird injury timing in his career.
I went ahead and I think like right after week 17 or something, I was like, Robbie Anderson's going to be the guy that I'm happily overdrafting over everybody next year.
And I'm a big-time Sam Darnold believer, and it's just like I'm anxious about Loggins and Gase. It's not what I want to see at all.
Understandable, yeah.
But yeah, Funchess is a guy who... sorry to interrupt. Funchess is a guy who I can just imagine him stumbling into eight touchdowns easily. You know?
Okay, yeah. So the situation really does set up extremely well. for him. So let's jump over to Adam Humphries, someone that you've been talking about on this podcast as like someone who's going to cash in probably more than what he probably could be worth, and how you could get someone with a similar talent level for a lot less. He goes ahead and inks a 4-year, $36 million deal with the Titans. What was your reaction there?
That was less money than I thought reports were predicting for him. Like it was, I thought I read someplace that somebody was thinking like 11-12 million, basically more like, you know, the kind of I'm trying to remember who I guess Tyrell went for more than I expected. He was like 14 million a year. We'll talk about him eventually too, but sure. Humphries was a lot of people's pick to be the highest paid free agent receiver, which I conceded, like, yeah, he's gonna get 10 or 11 million or something, but I was surprised by that. I was like, how is he gonna make more money than Tyrell Williams? Adam Humphries, as a senior at Clemson, was outproduced by Jermone Hopper, who I don't even remember who he is hardly. It's like I remember the name, but if someone was like, "Who is he?" I was like, I don't know. Maybe he was like 6'6" or 5'8". I don't remember.
One of those.
Yeah, and he was also outproduced. He was wildly outproduced by then true freshman Artavis Scott. So he disappeared. He's a non-prospect, and Humphries couldn't get on the field, let alone get as many targets as him. So I don't think Humphries is as good as people think he is. I think that he was very good for Tampa Bay because he has very good hands and he can do like underneath routes pretty well. He's got a little bit of craftiness after the catch, but he was doing like 5.8, 5.9 yards after catch on average last year. And if you just lower that to 4, and Cole Beasley was at 3.5 last year for whatever that's worth. If you lower that yards after catch average to 4, Humphries' yards per target drops from 7.8 to 6.5. And if it's that, no one cares who he is. So he'll be, I don't know, maybe better than Tajay Sharpe, but I'm not taking that for a given. Tajay Sharpe was a really productive player at Massachusetts. So, yeah, I think that Humphries was a product of a system where Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, DeSean Jackson, and O.J. Howard had the defense worried about almost anything but Humphries.
Yeah, 5.8 yards after the catch is 83rd percentile. So
yeah,
that's
like, I'm not
way ahead of where you would think a guy
he had
like
2 years at Clemson where he averaged 7 yards a catch or less.
Okay.
This is not sustainable.
But do you like the fit within this Titans offense? Do you think that, you know, they needed a guy who's more of an ace out of the slot?
Maybe, but that was like Tajay Sharpe's whole theory. Like he was supposed to be a good slot guy. He's a lanky slot guy. Maybe that's an issue. Humphries is quicker, shorter. But I still think Taywan Taylor is good. And if they're not including him in a plan, if they're not getting him outside snaps, I think Tennessee's whole judgment is off. And I basically don't want anything to do with anybody but Corey Davis. And I guess if I'm in best ball and it's like the 18th round, Mariota's still there, sure, I'll take him.
Right.
But Derrick Henry I still like, and especially in best ball too. But if they don't realize that Taywan Taylor is their second best receiver, then they're going to have a lot of other bad decisions that they make. And in the meantime, Humphries' ADP on the best ball 10 the past couple weeks was 129 overall, whereas Devin Funchess was around 200. Like
okay.
that's a sieve on your roster if you had Humphries at that price.
Funchess now dating back to drafts taking place as of Tuesday and beyond, so March 12th, Funchess going around pick 143. Interesting other toss up, maybe one that maybe is a little bit closer for you, and Humphries a little bit ahead of him, 137. But John Brown going 143, so like just a little bit ahead of Funchess in drafts, and he's obviously going to a situation where quarterback isn't as polished as Andrew Luck, as we know. But I mean, John Brown, a huge deep threat. Josh Allen likes to push the ball down the field. Where are you at with these two?
Well, I have Funchess safely ahead of Brown, but I have Brown safely ahead of Jamison Crowder, and in best ball especially. In DFS tournaments, I can imagine Brown having real utility. The problem is, in redraft, you will have no idea when his good games
nope.
will happen. So the other thing is Robert Foster, I think, is a guy who, in hindsight, we can rationalize as like a second or third round talent. I mean, if he had played at Alabama instead of being hurt for 4 years in a row, he could have been like a first or second round pick. I mean, he ran that 4.41. He quite plausibly could have played ahead of Calvin Ridley among other big name guys if he had had the health to do it. So I'm inclined to believe the results from Robert Foster last year. I think he's more likely to be another Robbie Anderson than like I don't know, whoever the last case of some guy who had four good games and disappeared was. But between respecting Foster and the nature, like the average depth of target for these two receivers might be like 17, 18 yards, something like that, because the whole offense is based on just almost like four verts, NFL blitz, just run downfield. Allen will run around as long as he needs to for you receiver to get 60 yards away, and then he chucks it at somebody. And his accuracy from 40 to 70 yards is about as good as it is from like 0 to 20. So it makes sense to build an offense this way. Like, yeah, you maybe will have a lot of three and outs. Maybe you'll have some arm punts that you didn't really want to happen.
Sure.
But there will be a lot of explosive moments, and if you have a defense that gives you extra possessions through turnovers and sacks, it really can work. And it also lends itself to potentially like really high explosion scenarios where it's just like John Brown and Robert Foster are guys who could turn four targets into like 160 yards and two touchdowns.
Right.
You know, you don't want to bet on four targets ever as like a matter of, you know, general
of that going well.
Yeah. But it's like there's that kind of explosiveness here. So that in best ball where you don't need to make the decision ahead of time, or in DFS tournaments where you already are like, yeah, I know there's a really high risk here, it's going to be a good fit, I think. And there will be high peaks as much as there will be probably a lot of like dead stretches too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a pretty like accurate, I'd say, way of framing this Bills offense and what Brown adds to it. And then of course Foster, I think, is, you know, butting into, you know, somebody that could be a Pro Bowler maybe down the line here a little bit from now. Another receiver on the other kind of end of the spectrum as far as where his career is, but still a productive player, still a really good player in my opinion, DeSean Jackson. So he moves back to Philadelphia. He's going to be presumably Carson Wentz's deep threat here. What did you make of that signing?
I think he's a really good player, and I think he'll make the Eagles better, but for now,
they got him for nothing too, by the way.
Right. For now, I'm a little skeptical about whether he'll be like harnessable in fantasy. He's of course going to be a GPP guy just because he's so fast and he can do that thing where four targets is 150 yards and two touchdowns. But I think Carson Wentz is less suited to striking that particular part of the field than Josh Allen is. So I can imagine there being plays where it's just like DeSean Jackson is getting open, but the ball is instead going to Ertz just like over and over and over. But Nelson Agholor is not going anywhere this year. At least I don't think he will be. Like, I think they would have to trade him. I doubt they would
I think I saw him. He's probably staying put.
Yeah, yeah. So he's going to be the slot guy. Maybe, and you can't take it for granted that they're going to run a three receiver base because they have Dallas Goedert there. So this could be a base two tight end offense, and then DeSean Jackson's snaps would be subject to a split with Agholor on some basis in two wide situations. So I can imagine him only playing like 600, 700 snaps or something like that, and then only getting like, you know, 60, 70 targets. And I'm not expecting him to do 10 yards a target with Wentz there. So I think Jackson is really good, but I'm worried that he basically landed in the exact same scenario as he did with Tampa Bay, where they're just not suited to utilizing what he's so great at.
Yeah, I didn't love the fit, and we talked about this before that trade even went through.
Should have like, gone to the Rams or something. Come on.
Yes, that would have been awesome. So, you know, we were talking about how we like DeSean Jackson still, even at this stage of his career, but Wentz just doesn't hit the deep pass with the really same kind of ferocity that you would like to see.
He's an intermediate guy here. More so.
No, so, and he doesn't put, like, you know, it's kind of a trope, but I mean, Alex Smith, I think, pushed the ball down the field further than he did on average last year. And I know using Alex Smith in that type of context is sort of just like a rhetorical device, but it goes to show you that Wentz wasn't really chucking it deep down the field, which is obviously like the best part of DeSean's game.
Yeah, I think Wentz will be better this year now that he's got more than a year back from the ACL, but he's more of an intermediate kind of guy than a downfield one by nature. And I basically expect Jackson to have kind of like a 750, 800 yard, 4, 5, 6 touchdown kind of year, but it'll be like maybe all those touchdowns occur in two or three games.
Yeah, no, they could certainly be clustered. What other receiver signings kind of caught your eye?
Well, there's Tyrell Williams going to Oakland, which I think is a slight upgrade just because his target volume could literally double. He was only doing 65 targets a year with the Chargers, and people are going to say like always one dimensional, but he actually got a lot of slot snaps last year and did more in different parts of the field. He wasn't just a sideline and vertical guy. The problem is Derek Carr doesn't throw to anywhere in particular well, and especially not deep, where Tyrell is not one dimensional there, but he is very uniquely good there. And it would be nice to be able to extract that part of his skill set, which I just don't think Carr can. So I think he might get like 120 targets this year. He's not going to do 10 yards a target like he did with Phillip Rivers every single year. It's going to be more like maybe 7.8, 8 yards a target, but the catch rate's going to have to be something like 56 in that case, because Carr's just not good enough.
Oof.
I mean, he could get better. To be fair, it's like there is even Eli Manning, like he had like, people forget how many chances they gave him. He was bad for just like 5 years before he became good, and maybe Carr is another case. There's something to be said for actual like continuity of development time. Like, it is a thing. Sometimes bad quarterbacks just stop being bad eventually, but I don't want to bet on it.
Well, hopefully, you know, with the talent that they have put around him, especially at receiver, with obviously the addition of Antonio Brown as well, he's running out of excuses at the very least.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say he's out of them. He was out of them when Amari Cooper got traded, and that happened. That all happened afterward. But otherwise, at receiver, Breshad Perriman, we mentioned he was going to resign with the Browns, but upon their trade for Odell Beckham, he headed to Tampa basically to take the DeSean Jackson role. And I think he might be pretty good at it because Humphreys isn't there, Jackson isn't there. Chris Godwin almost has to be their primary slot receiver in three wide sets, but he can play outside, of course. In any case, Perriman on one side, Evans on the other, Godwin anywhere in between is a dangerous look for a defense. And Perriman was very good for the Browns in his limited showing last year.
Nauseatingly good.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where maybe this change of scenery just cured his yips. Like, maybe he really was just rattled in Baltimore and just, like, going someplace new made him, it was like waking up from a nightmare or something, and he just became himself again. Who knows?
Baltimore will do that to people.
Yes, and Joe Flacco will do that to a receiver. But I think that, he's interesting. I'm almost more interested in Perriman than I am DeSean Jackson.
Okay.
So that's I don't know how I feel about either exactly, but I'm not worried about the current personnel in Tampa getting in Perriman's way, because I think it's going to be a three receiver offense.
And it should be.
Yeah, but otherwise, Dante Moncrief going to Pittsburgh, it's kind of like I compared Funchess to him before, same deal. Moncrief didn't do much in Jacksonville last year, but he was pretty good on a per-target basis, and considering how terrible the quarterbacks were, I don't think you can hold him like accountable for, you know, how bad the offense was. He's a big, fast guy who, I mean, James Washington did not have a good rookie year. I think it's a pretty decent chance that Moncrief is better right now, and maybe even for the next 2 years, which is the length of the contract.
Okay.
Washington, I still think, will be good, but it's just hard for a second-year guy to compete with like a sixth year guy who's as big and fast as Moncrief. Moncrief has a lot more tools than James Washington does. Yep. And I expect Washington to still be drafted way ahead of him. So I don't want to count out Washington, but if Moncrief is like three rounds cheaper, I'm picking him.
Okay. That makes sense. And yeah, there was enough left to be desired from what Washington put on tape last year to where that does make some sense. One running back.
Yeah, I think we're mostly to running backs. I feel like that everybody else at receiver is either not real or hasn't signed yet.
Yes. So, Mark Ingram.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, he's a good player, and you would probably know a lot better than me, but I figure they basically are penciling him in for the Kenneth Dixon snaps, right? Because they have to make the offense more like the Kaepernick San Francisco offense and less like the Rich Rodriguez offense they were running last year.
Yeah, Greg Roman is the guy and the architect for both. So,
but I still would be surprised, I guess, if they got totally rid of that Gus Edwards role, because Edwards is so good at just being the hammer running back, and maybe they only give him like 6 to 8 carries a game instead of 15 like they were doing last year. But I don't see him disappearing.
No, he won't disappear. But yeah, I think Ingram he functions nicely when there's a compliment to him, and the Ravens obviously don't have anyone near the skill set or the skill period of an Alvin Kamara, but I think just the sheer rush percentage that the Ravens are going to have and the ball possession type of offense that they're going to be going with, I think this does kind of bode well for Mark Ingram this year. I think this is a good landing spot for him.
I'm agnostic on, like, I can't remember what his price was before, and like I think people were generally assuming he would re-sign with the Saints, and I can't tell whether I think it's an upgrade or downgrade going to Baltimore. Like, I can imagine him having consistency issues just because
he's going around pick 50.
Okay.
Right ahead of Chris Carson.
Yeah, I don't want either of them, I don't think, at that price. Like, I'd probably just rather hammer. Like, I'd rather take running back, running back, running back in the first three rounds and then not take another one until, like, the ninth or something like that.
Okay.
But, yeah, for the price, I would prefer, I think, Ingram over Carson there. It's just, I don't know. I feel like he'll be harder to use in redraft because there will be games where I feel like there will be games anyway where Edwards is good or Dixon is good. But if not, then this is a team that should have, yeah, favorable time of possession. Lamar Jackson makes you play with wider splits as a defense, which could make Ingram like a career best sort of inside runner this year. And that alone could be worth quite a lot. It's just like, I guess I still feel like Dixon is good enough and Edwards was good enough that I'm a little worried about them staying involved because $5 million a year is not a big deal now. Like,
no.
if it was 10 years ago, it'd be like, oh yeah, Mark Ingram, 25 carries a game, but $5 million right now just isn't a huge commitment. And I feel like they're going to give him like the first crack at it, but if he stumbles or if he gets hurt and Dixon and Edwards are doing well, I can imagine it being more of a more even split than we might wish for.
I think at the very least they're going to give him the chance to take the job and run with it.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. I definitely do. And it's only like, I would prefer that the guys behind him be just like way worse than him, and I'm not convinced they are.
No, both of those guys looked good at different points last year.
I'll have to get some shares of Ingram though, because yeah, it's like if he does just stay healthy and Lamar Jackson just stays healthy, it's hard to imagine that team finishing, I don't know, like less than like third or fifth in rushing production this year.
Oh God, yeah. I don't if Jackson stays healthy, then yeah, no, that offense is going to. I'd be shocked if it finishes not first.
Right. Yeah, I'm generally leaning that way too. It's just like to express how unlikely it would be for Ingram to be like a true zero or anything. It's just it might not be as consistent as we want is what my specific concern would be.
Okay, that's fair. So maybe like the best ball.
Best ball is a lot easier, but I mean, we'll see in redraft. I would be able to feel a lot worse about a running back two than the definite starter for the Ravens.
Sure. Let's see. Where else were some running back signings that you liked? I think I remember you talking about Tevin Coleman yesterday as an interesting signing out in San Francisco.
Yeah, so I don't know where the market's going to head on those two, but Ingram and Coleman are interesting to me because I feel like the public is generally much higher on Ingram and lower on Coleman, but I might prefer Coleman straight up, and I'm pretty sure the way the price is going, I'll prefer him because I can imagine getting him almost like a full round later than Ingram. But we'll see if Jerick McKinnon, who I don't think has any guaranteed money left on his contract,
I saw that he's probably like as good as gone then.
Oh really? Okay.
Well, because there's like no guaranteed money left,
right? I mean he's not guaranteed anything. I would be surprised, I guess, if they just got rid of him, especially because Breida got nicked up last year and Coleman is not the most durable running back himself.
They're going within the same round right now, by the way. Coleman about 50, pick 58.
Okay, so yeah, I don't know where that's headed, but I feel like people still think Jerick McKinnon is better than Coleman. He could be, but I don't think he is. I think Coleman's probably better, and it's almost like difficult to pin down because they just do different things. As much as they're both speed backs with ostensible big play upside, they do it very differently. Like Coleman's a guy who needs a crack. He needs a straight line crack in the defense, and if it is there, there's almost no one you'd rather have in that scenario because he's just out of a cannon when he gets that crease and he just doesn't get caught. But McKinnon's much better at slashing and like kind of getting guys to lose their footing and juke them out, whereas Coleman's just kind of battering ram without much power. Like he's just like batters straight through, and sometimes if it's a weak door, he just goes gone forever. Yeah.
Okay. So what are you doing with him then?
I'll probably be going at him in best ball because he'll have also consistency issues if McKinnon and Breida are present and able to play. But otherwise, among running backs, I think Latavius Murray going to New Orleans is a huge upgrade for him, and he's someone who I think we need to think about in the seventh sort of round because he's taking the Ingram role. It's like, where were we going to take Ingram? Probably fifth round, and Murray's probably a round or two worse, so sixth, seventh, I figure.
Yeah, I mean, the upgrade as far as the offensive line and the overall play calling is, you know, it's massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the key could be both not very effective and still super valuable in fantasy. Just, I mean, Kamara could get hurt too. He might have been playing a little nicked up last year.
I think he was. So.
And if he does miss a game, it's like Murray's a top five running back projection that week.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking elsewhere, anyone else catch your eye as far as the running backs?
Not really. Mike Davis might be interesting if the Bears don't draft somebody, but tight end class is pretty weak. Jared Cook hasn't signed anywhere. I think we got pretty much all the fantasy relevant guys.
Yeah, so next week we'll kind of catch any of the other signings that happen from today onward to, you know, kind of wrap up the free agency, and then in the coming weeks we'll start really ramping things up again for the draft. Any parting thoughts otherwise?
Yeah, we'll get back to the draft a bit next week. We actually did a three-round rookie post-combine mock that'll be on the site once the free agency craze dies down a bit.
So there you have it. That was our free agency special. Come back next week for more draft talk and a little bit more free agency talk as well here on the RotoWire NFL podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.